not automatic that you will wake up in the morning. So you must thank God, Honorable Dose, you must thank God that you are able to wake up this morning.
I thank my mother.
Apologies. If we can start there. Nothing much on opening, except that we sympathize with women who are here whilst the conference is continuing in Parliament. Because we have a lot in our plates, we must do this work. South Africa is looking on us as from tomorrow. So we must get ready for that and then hit the ground running tomorrow. The Minister of Communication, Honorable Ayanda Dlodlo, has apologized. She's booked off sick the whole of this week. So she's unable to attend this meeting. And the delegation is led by the Acting Director General. I'm not told about the Deputy Minister, but for sure I do have the apology for the Minister. From other members, there is no apology. So we'll proceed with that understanding. Are you an apologist?
Yes, sir.
Honorable Lozi Anaram.
Chairperson, I think that we must register concern that the delegation is not without any of the political leadership. I mean, what is the use of having deputy ministers in the first place? What is the use of having two people that we pay who cannot be able to at least one of them come and represent to this important institution? So they ought to tell us, in particular the Honorable Mohammed Fall, if she takes the work of being accountable as a deputy minister seriously. Because we don't have an apology. And that is wrong. So we must register that. Because if we don't do that, Chairperson, then we're not going to be taken serious. People ought to respect, it's part of their remit, that they ought to appear together with the entities as and when we meet. I'm sure that they were told on time. And she in particular, if she's not on her way, then she did not apologize, and we don't know therefore why she's not here. Which means wherever she is, she's probably not on country duty. Because country duty calls her to be here at this moment to account to this democratic institution. So we must register that and begin to raise some level of seriousness on their part. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Fanda.
Thanks, Chair. I have the same concern. I appreciate that the minister is sick, which happens, but the MDDA has been made the responsibility of the Deputy Minister, Mohammed Hlala. We saw her after she was appointed, and we haven't seen her since. So we really must register our serious dissatisfaction with her, one, not giving apologies, and two, not being here. And then also, Chair, can we please do an introduction round? Because I see there's a very big... With the introduction round of the MDDA, because it's a really big delegation. And as we know, we are in very tight economic times, so we need to know why...
No, we're on apologies now. We'll come back to that.
Okay, cool.
We'll come back to that.
Thanks.
Any other member? We are trying to get her whereabouts, because I think it's quite important. But there is nothing coming. We have sent a word, because you are right, she's responsible. She has been delegated MDDA as her responsibility by the minister. And if the minister is not there, surely she must be there. She must be here. But we'll hear the response. There is no body from that deputy minister's office here. And I agree with members. It's totally wrong. Completely wrong. But I hope he's or she's on her way. But it's 10 o'clock already. We must all be here by 10 o'clock. Those are the comments. Those are the comments from members on apologies. Just for purposes of the announcement, before I get to the introduction, it's related to work that we'll be doing tomorrow, so that members can engage on this at a particular stage. We have one person from the 36 shortlisted candidates, because it comes to my table now, who is withdrawing. And that person is, maybe let me read the letter. Withdrawal of candidacy for SABC Board, DF Committee Secretary. Purpose of this correspondence is to notify you of the withdrawal of my candidacy from the SABC Board interview process due to personal reasons. I wish to sincerely thank the committee for considering me for this position. And the person is Yasir Hafaji.
Yes.
And what it means now, following her or his withdrawal, we now remain with 35 candidates to interview. I felt I must do this now, so that members, even before we start the meeting, can reflect on it. Who withdraw? We are left with 35. Members? Honorable Kalar?
No, Chair, I think let's accept the withdrawal. It's fine.
And leave the 35. Agreed? Agreed. Now we will, nothing comes. Can we make some introductions before we go to the report, which you have, members, of KZN oversight? I would love to hear the voices of all those who are from the department and MDDA. But surely we'll have to start with the acting DG, and then all of them will have to introduce themselves. Can you do that, members, so that you know whom you are dealing with? Over to you, acting DG.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Denisile Delwa, and I'm the acting director general for the Department of Communication. Denisile Delwa, Acting Director General for the Department of Communications. My name is Pele Sangoma, I'm the Chair of MDDA Board.
Louise Vale, Member of the MDDA Board.
Musa Sishangi, Board Member. Donald Dipoko, I'm acting as the CEO with the MDDA.
Sandile Nene, advisor to the minister.
Unati Bono, acting chief of staff. Minister of Communications.
Smo
Nkosiso Mpanza, I'm the advisor to the minister.
My name is Freddy Mamoremi, from Entity Oversight, Department of Communications.
Nkadil, are you done? At the back?
My name is Khulu Lwaseyise. I'm the company secretary at MDDA.
DOC and MDDA done? Is there any reason why company secretary is coming? There is one state for you, and this is MDDA.
Yes, members, that's the delegation from the DOC and them today. Honorable Fonda?
There's a chief of staff of the minister here and two advisors, and the minister is not here, which is a bit strange. I'm not quite sure what they're doing here if the minister is not here. Are they here to represent her, and can we ask the questions to them?
No. No, the last part, there is someone who's leading the delegation, acting DG. Questions will go to the acting DG. And if she's delegating responses, she is free to do that to anybody relevant. The minister is not well. She's at home sleeping. That's the last part I wanted to tell, I wanted to raise. The acting DG is here, she will delegate. Other issues, acting DG will respond. Honorable Tolaji?
Honorable
Kongubel.
Good morning, comrade. Honorable Chairperson, I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm still a comrade.
Yeah. Honorable Chairperson, I thought I must just welcome the acting DG. However, I'm sure when she opens her mouth at time comes, she will tell us when is the department going to add a permanent DG. There was in between Honorable Ayanda Jonzo, Minister, she's the second acting. That's quite a worrying factor. But about the, I think she needs to explain to us about the office of the minister. I don't think there should be a problem. If the minister is not personally here, then his office should be represented. I don't think there's a chance to mention that. I think we are still within the rules, because as you are correctly explaining, that the acting DG will give people, according to their discretion, on who should reply what and when. But the office of the ministry will always be welcome in the office, in the meetings of the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Tongbele.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think the greater part has been said by Member Taraj. But I just wanted to emphasize this principle. If you are an advisor, you must always stay equipped to advise adequately. That finds expression in you attending as many relevant meetings as possible. That's the point I wanted to make. So it can be strange why advisors are here.
I think it's well said by members. This is a committee meeting. This is a public meeting. That is why we have everybody at the back row. Those who are supporting us, whether it's a spokesperson, the researchers, and all of those people. Any word from the office of the deputy minister, Mr. Wall, come this way, and then Temungosi will tell me, and then I'll talk to the committee. Then, before we start with the report, the KZN oversight report. Let me state the reasons why we start with that report. Members, it informs us, as you know, of what is happening on the ground insofar as MDDA is concerned. I think members will agree with me. What we found during the oversight is reflected in the report, but it talks to the situation in MDDA. I think I must say that up front. That is why we started with it, and then we end with the actual presentation from MDDA. Honourable Fanda?
Just before we start, you're going to Okay, are you listening? Okay, all right. So you're going to hand over to the MDDA now to present. But I wanted to talk about the agenda before we move forward. In terms of the agenda that Temigosi sent us last night, I see on the agenda that the report that we sent by the speaker is no longer included. I mean, we agreed last week that we were going to discuss that report, and it was also in the Z list, I believe. The report...
The last point.
It says here on the agenda, KZN adoption of committee oversight reports, and then briefing by the MDDA and the Minister of Communications. So I just want to know if that's still going to happen. Are we still going to discuss that report, or has it been taken
it's
from...
In this. Sorry about that one, but it's in this one.
Okay, so it's still happening.
It's still happening.
Okay, no problem. I just wanted to check that.
It's still happening. The other thing that is circulated before we get to the report is the program from tomorrow to Friday.
Okay.
You did get the program.
Yes.
30th, the names and what times and all of that.
Yes.
I don't think that one needs discussion. It's just to know whom we are going to start with tomorrow, the 12 candidates that they were agreed upon. What we'll get, even on our soft copies, is the. You remember I was saying last time, we requested Coden Advisor to develop a broad guideline. He's going to do that. It's still, what he gave me was last time was, in my view, pointing to the actual questions, and we didn't want that. So that will be circulated. It's just to guide us for tomorrow. Okay, members? Can we... I'm told that the report is that the Deputy Minister is on... What is this? Study leave. Up to when, I don't know, because we must know up to when. Because that report, that apology has been coming. Up to when? Up to when, Waller? Do you know? You can
yeah. The DM is finishing her masters at the end of this year. But
end of this year?
I'm saying, Chair, the DM is finishing her masters at the end of this year, but from time to time she does have schoolwork to attend to.
So she's on study leave until the end of the year.
I will get the academic schedule, Chair, for the next meeting.
Members? Honorable Kalazo?
No, Chair, I think Mr. Wolo, I don't think let's take that explanation. I think what you do so that we don't distort the apology of the deputy minister. Your question, she must answer it in writing. There can't be an apology of the whole year if you are still at work. It means you won't be doing any work. So in avoiding the risk of distorting, I think she must actually send that on, it must be on record on you.
You want to say something? I think Honorable Kalago is right. I think we must write to the Deputy Minister so that he can respond first to raise our concerns to her, and then to tell her to give us a response in writing so that the committee can get that response. I think that's what Honorable Kalago, you are saying.
Not sure I agree with that. I mean, we obviously in full support of members of parliament and members of the executive studying and bolstering their qualifications, in full support of that. But when it comes to appearing before the committee charged with conducting oversight over your departments, I think she must make time. I mean, it can't be every time she's supposed to be here. She's away on study leave, but we see her at parliamentary sittings. So obviously she can make time, and I think she must make time in her schedule to appear once in a while before this committee, especially if it's we're dealing with an entity that's her direct responsibility. So I also agree we must get it in full writing what her apology is.
I thought that is the apology. Yeah, let me just get clarity. Is that the apology that she's studying? That's what we are being told.
Yeah, it's on study leave.
Oh.
And then we wanted to know up to when is the study leave.
But where did it start? Well, you see, because I want to move that we must reject it. We must reject that apology right to the leader of government. Government business, because I don't believe it. I think she's malicious because she has never been here a study leave that long.
I think we've concluded the matter by saying we're going to write to her.
Chair, my view is that we write to the leader of government business, because we've sat here so many times complaining about Mahambila Ehlala all the time, and then I don't think she takes us serious. So the Honorable Cyril Ramaphosa must be brought in to rein on her, because ultimately what we want is for her to be here really to account on her responsibilities.
Honorable Kungubela.
All what I wanted to say is that I think we, as our oversight should be tightened up in the sense that if it's not acceptable why the minister or the deputy minister is not here, we must check if it is worth listening to the report of the department and what will be the consequences of the oversight deficit in that line. Because this is a serious issue. When you say the department must come to present, you are talking to the minister or the deputy minister. Then if it becomes common that they do not present themselves, there must be a way in which the committee deals with
it. I agree with the discussion in totality. However, I think we must hear the committee, the department chairperson, because this is our report. And it's us as the committee that we felt there's a need for us to listen to the report, presented it by the minister and her deputy, so that together we can deal with the actual problems that are facing MDDA. Now that they are here, I think let's separate those two.
Yeah.
Let's separate those two. The issue of the deputy minister not being here, I think we spoke a lot about it. We are all equally concerned, noting, and we have just said, because it would be unfair if we elevate this to the leader of business, because as a committee, we haven't dealt with this matter as we are doing now. Let's agree to say we'll write to her, put the matter before her, she must respond in writing, and then we take it from there. But insofar as the department and the MDDA being here before us, because we thought there's also urgency of us meeting with them. Let's deal with that matter, Chairperson. The way we planned earlier on. But everything else, I agree with the honourable members.
Thank you. 10th will be Honorable Van Dijk, but we agree that we go to the leader of government business later if we have a problem.
Morning, Chair. I also just want to raise my concern because we only received this NDDA report this morning. So it seems as if there's a bit of chaos. So the involvement of the Deputy Minister is definitely missed.
No, we agree. Can we proceed? Honourable Machoba?
Okay, whatever suffering in MDDA, we must put over the shoulder of the MD, of the GM, because it means the entity is suffering under his heaven. So I'm just trying to raise that seriousness check. We must acknowledge any failure from MDDA and we must put over the GM shoulder. Thanks, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, members, but I think let's listen to issues first before we conclude. Let's listen, Honourable Machoba, to the issues that will engage from MDDA before we can point fingers to anyone. Members, I think let's take that route. Thank you very much. We'll come back to MDDA. Can we? The report has been circulated, members. There is no. The report of the oversight is circulated. It's just to inform all of us, remind all of us what happened in KZN. And then if members do have issues, nobody's going to read the report for the committee, I think. I think we've gone through the report. In fact, it's something that we know. Because we must also adopt that. We must also adopt that report as a reflection of what we did in case of that. And then after that, we can go to MDDA members. Honorable Dose.
I haven't read the report because it was sent late. It was sent late. I saw it this morning. I haven't... I have fresh memories. Because it was a very traumatic experience. But I don't know if it's reflected here. So I would request the indulgence of the rest. If everybody else received it much earlier, then I don't know. I mean, then there is a problem. But I'm seeing it this morning, and I haven't gone through it, Honorable Chairperson.
I think we just need a way forward on this because adoption of this report can be done later, but the issues that are reflected in the report as we see it now talks to what we are going to get to, from MDDA. Okay. You see, we can just take it as a reference point when we deal with the MDDA.
Chair, I was going to put, I agree with that approach. Honorable Rose and others are right. The final report, we got it this morning, but we did receive the draft some time, but we have not gone through, we have not read the final report. Also, I'm in that dilemma.
Sure.
But as you say, the issues we can raise because we're in the oversight. Yeah.
Okay, I think let's take that, Honorable Machoba. That is noted. I think we should have received the report last week so that we go through it over the weekend. We didn't. But that report as something that we'll refer to as we engage, because we know, at least we know what is in it. Then we'll have to go to item number 2, which is a briefing by the Minister of Communication on the status of MDDA. And in the absence of the Minister, we'll have to hand over to the acting DG. And the acting DG must not forget what Honorable Tolasha raised, the question of actors in DOC. I think that was the concern. This one acts and leaves, the other one come, acts, and leave. Delwa, yeah. Ukunsile is the first name, Delwa is the surname. Ms. Delwa, over to you, acting DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the one question that has been raised to me from Honorable Dolashe is not a very difficult one to answer, because the Minister is in process of filling both the DG and the DDG positions. When the Minister came in, there had been an attempt to fill those positions, and she had to restart the process because there was only one application for the DG post, and she has had to headhunt. So we are busy with that process. In terms of the DDGs, the Minister has completed the shortlisting and has set dates for the interviews. So it's a matter of just filling those positions. I think the question raised, though, speaks to the heart of some of the challenges that the MDDA, similarly to other entities reporting to the Minister, are facing, in that the department is not adequately capacitated. As a result, some of the work that the department is supposed to be doing is a bit lacking. And this shows in terms of some of the reports that are coming through to us on the state of the entities. Coming to the MDDA itself, I think the point that is important to make is that since coming into office, the Minister has sought to stabilize the MDDA. And by doing that, one of the things that she has tried to do is to make sure that the membership of the board is complete. There is a process that is currently with the presidency to finalize that, and Minister has been pushing for that process, and all indications are it will be completed very soon. And that is the appointments of the board members of the MDDA that are reserved for the president to make. The other part is currently under parliament process, and we are hoping by the end of the month that process will be concluded, and then we will have a full board. I think for the department, the main aim really is to start there, because it is the board that is going to then ensure the filling of the executive positions going down, the CEO and the rest. So that becomes very critical, and that's the stage where we are at, where we are trying very hard to make sure that that happens. Another intervention that is key to highlight is the secondment of Mr. Donald Lipogo by the Minister to the MDDA, which was another attempt by the executive authority to try and support the MDDA while it's going through its process of filling the positions and while they feel instability. The idea was really for the MDDA to get somebody with the skill that Mr. Lipogo has as a former acting DG of GCIS to provide that type of support. I think both these interventions are, in the shareholders' view, her responsibility to ensure that she supports the functioning of the board. I think also what is important to highlight is that from time to time, the minister has been having engagement with the MDDA board in its current state. And through that interaction, there has been an attempt to make sure that at least the work of MDDA continues, they can continue to implement their programs despite the current challenges that have been highlighted in terms of the lack of quorum of the board. So it's with that in mind that I really would like to request the MDDA chair to make the full presentation to the meeting. Suffice to say that the minister is currently seized with the matter of resolving the matters of the MDDA and is providing the support that is necessary to the MDDA in order to do that. And maybe as the discussions go forward, we will be able to elaborate on some of the things that we do should the members require that. But without wasting further your time, I'll hand over to the chairperson of the MDDA.
There you are, members. Can I request Ms. Ngoma to present? Over to you, Ms. Ngoma.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. We are presenting today, our presentation is divided in two parts. I think the first one really reflects on the work that we've done to date, and then the second portion, I think, starts from page chapter slide 22, which actually looks at what is the current status quo and what are the challenges that the institution is confronted with. And perhaps my opening remarks in that is that we always appreciate the opportunity to come and engage with the portfolio committee. I think part of it is really we often get constructive feedback, but as well as to look at the areas where we need to strengthen and ensure that we actually execute our work in a much more effective way.
I apologize to disturb the honorable chairperson of the board, but I just want to find out whether the report from the chairperson is not going to be able to speak to our report, because I think it's important for us to relate both as we're presenting both. I'm not sure whether, like we did, they only received their report this morning. Otherwise, for me, it was going to be more strategic to align the report that is quite important, but also with what in fact is taking place insofar as our oversight in the MCA. Because if that doesn't happen, then we'll just sit here and forever listen, and this is always the case. So there should be some coherence between the report and between the presentation from the chairperson and the report which I have sent.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dolashe. If the chairperson of the board of MDDA is aware of the issues in our report, as their office was represented, she must talk to that. But if she misses or she doesn't talk to that, we'll then raise questions around what we found in KZN. I think let's proceed with that now.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I mean, we'll probably handle the questions. We have received the report, but we're not aware that actually it's going to be a coherence that the Honourable Dolashe, but we'll be able to handle any response to the questions. The first slide, Honourable, really highlights the legislative environment under which the MDDA is operating under, and it was established. And I'm not really going to dwell into the legislative environment. I think here we highlight in this slide the issues around the vision, the mission, and the values of the organization, that its primary mandate is to ensure that there's an accessibility and transform media is diverse by nature, so that it's able to actually capture working class issues, women's issues, but as well as people from rural communities. And that's part of the diversification. I think we do that consistently in our own oversight work that we undertake. We lead in the media development, transformation and diversification in South Africa. I think there's a well-known issue around the transformation of the media and some of the constraints that are there, and part of the establishment of the third tier of the community sector is fundamentally to address media transformation and development issues, to ensure that the voices that are invisible and sectors that are not invisible in society, is that through that we can contribute, and that the values unto which we undertake our work, that it must be done through our integrity, accountability, inclusivity, ubuntu, and professionalism. Sorry. As a requirement, that we must be able to execute our work as the entity integrated with the National Development Plan, and we highlight the outcomes that are associated with our work, its outcome 6, outcome 12, and its outcome 14. It relates to nation building and social cohesion. It also ensuring that we contribute in the effective and development oriented public sector. And the third one is that we ensure that we contribute in an efficient, cooperative, and responsive economic infrastructure. So we achieve those three outcomes in different ways. I think the first outcome, amongst the key things that we do, is to provide an infrastructure, broadcasting infrastructure specifically, in this context, that is actually world-class, but as well as we ensure that it supports, it links up with the needs of the stations versus with what is happening in their own communities. And part of the nation building and social cohesion program is that by design, is that community media actually provides that platform. But we have two specific projects that are really linked with the nation building and social cohesion. And then the alignment, it's alignment between our strategy and the DOC strategy, goal 1 and goal 2, meaning how do we build capable and accomplished organization in the delivery of the mandate. Is that we are a board of knowledge and communication-based community media. In fact, we would comment later on in terms of our own social impact study. We'd actually seek to look at what types of dynamics that are emerging in communities around community media, and what should our new funding model really should be able to speak into how communities today are versus what they were in 2004 when NDDA was established. I think the issue around the media transformation and it's really critical in terms of our own work, because it's linked to content, participation, gender, and class-orientated issues. I think that slide just really highlights the issues that we're dealing with, and I'm really going to speak into the 20, just reflecting on our performance in the previous financial year and the first quarter. The slide before you is a reflection of the achievements that the organization had undergone through and they not achieved. And I think in our presentation, we'd actually explained that one of the reasons why we've not been able to, is what you call, we've had the challenges around institutional stability in as far as the senior leadership of the organization. However, the slide that we put up there is actually, it's on areas where there's program 1, program 2, program 3, program 4, and program 5. And the bars that are reflected, they actually reflect the areas that have not been met and the reasoning of the areas that have not been met in this quarter in particular has to do with the fact that they are related with the board. Now, you would know, members, that the vacancies that we started having challenges in relation to board vacancies in April, right at the beginning of the quarter. So it meant that the decisions that are associated with the implementation of our annual performance and plan associated with the decisions of the board, it meant that they had to be deferred. But all other decisions that were part of the annual performance plan and the strategic business plan, which would have been approved by both the portfolio committee and the executive authority, are actually being implemented. And the slide 9 highlights what are the key achievements in terms of the our contribution directly in terms of media transformation, is that we highlight that we have funded community broadcasting projects, 15 rural and 9 funded projects were led by youth. I think that distinction, we make it particularly because it's important to demonstrate that when you talk about media transformation from the third tier, what contribution are we making? So our biasness really is towards rural communities, being fully cognizant of the fact that it's communities that have access, that have no access to resources, but at the same time, the sustainability of such communities are linked to their own economic landscape. So in essence, it's important that we invest more resources in our own small way. We funded 10 commercial projects from the print perspective. The portfolio committee will recall that the print media has not been able to contribute at MDDA for a number of reasons, and we're currently in engagement with them. And our funding had then contributed 198 direct jobs. I think one of the highlights we think we must present to the portfolio committee is that, I mean, for the first time, we've actually raised 72 million in addition outside of the traditional funding. When we say traditional funding, meaning that we're currently being funded by the DOC. We've raised 72 million, and of course, with the contribution of the private sector. We have also had entered into a partnership with DOC, where they funded, I mean, they gave 21 million for supporting community radio stations equipment. I think that's always the area that there's a dualistic role with the MDDA and the DOC, where they have a unit that also does a bit of funding. So they transferred our funding, I mean their funding to us, so that we can oversee and execute. We've also revised our broadcasting equipment policy. Amongst the key things we wanted to and show that we improve is economics of scale. Over time, we observed as a board that we're losing a lot of money because amongst the key things that was happening is that various community broadcasting stations would submit their quotations and with different pricing. That's one. But I think the second issue is that we wanted to ensure that there's an increased harmonization in terms of the type of equipment that we provide. The third one was to actually ensure that there's a local content. So our spending as a state-owned enterprise must be able to contribute to industrialization because broadcasting equipment has a lot of technological development, but as well as there's a lot of industrial development into the sector. And then we have engaged with the mainstream media, and we're looking at innovative ways. I mean, part of it is to look at what type of innovative ways to ensure that we can still tap in the funding of print media with all their diverse constraints that they're still able to fund the print media. But one of the things that will be coming back to the portfolio committee jointly with the executive authority at some point is to ask that the in the same way the broadcasting funding is legislated, that the committee consider the same thing, that the print media funding at MDDA also be legislated. I think this is the second two flagship projects, which are around social integration, which is really the traditional role of media and community media specifically, where it's able to bridge gaps in communities where from both class and orientation where they would normally not be able to have a conversation. So there's one in Mamelodi and Port FM. So what makes this project, the Mamelodi and Port FM, that Mamelodi is a highly dominated, it's a Zulu, a Sotho-speaking community, and actually working together with the Port FM, which is an African colored community. And we see that actually as one of the ways of a future model of supporting communities, so that we creation of platforms between communities that would normally not have a conversation together, is that actually we support such initiatives going forward. So we're testing this, and the second one is really Sibonele Raiders, Sibonele Nkhayelitsha, and Gugulethu Sibonele, where we've had several dialogues, and I think that project is one of the things we're going to be starting to give it a much more required impetus in the next month. On capacity building intervention, one of the key issues that is really emerging strongly is the issue of language development, and in specific sectors. So we have an interest, for example, in areas of health. We have an interest in the legal language. So MDDA and SASATA had actually entered into an MOU, and one of the things that it actually sought to do was to actually capacitate journalists to be able, community journalists, to be able to report on science-related matters. So again, it's really our contribution in the issues of diversification, that by virtue of linguistic or your geographic location, that communities must not be disadvantaged, but they would still be able to better understand the science and engineering language. We've also entered into partnership with CEDA, and part of that partnership is really intended to ensure that community projects, while their responsibility is to ensure that it fulfills their social development responsibility, but the other issue that it must look at is to look at how does it position itself as an enterprise development project so that it's able to generate revenue. Because that's when we talk about the sustainability of the project, that's what we're talking about. Soul City project, I think there's a very clear consensus, I mean, in South Africa around the issues of gender-based violence. So we, in partnership with Soul City, to support stations on the gender-based violence issue, and I think part of it is to really ensure that the gender issues, gender equality issues, but as well as gender-based violence programming is actually integrated within the community radio station. And the other three is really we entered into a partnership on the press code. I think members will probably know that amongst the key challenges in the sector is really about compliance on the standards of press code. So we've taken 100 journalists there who are actually undergoing the program, because it's important so that they actually ensure that there's more compliance in ethical issues. We funded the AIP Women in Community Publishing Project, AIP's Association of Independent Publishers, and part of it is to really take up whether looking at the women's role in the publishing sector, but as well as look at the content that is contained, and that there's a gender-sensitive content that is part of the publishing community. The grantee orientation workshop, amongst the key things we do, it always makes sure that the projects that we fund are actually able to go through the grantee orientation workshop. The intention of the grantee orientation workshop is for them to understand the service level agreement, the expectations between the two parties and their deliverables, but as well as it's the use of funding that we would have allocated. And then we entered in an MOU with MIC CETA for training in rural based communities, and part of it is to really look at what type of bottom-up issues that are coming out, so that and what type of support we need to provide to the rural base, so that they're able to position themselves for business enterprise, and that there's relevance in the type of programming that they produce. Then, from a research perspective, we have commissioned a wide range research program. I mean, one of the really flagship program that is flagship research that is coming out is a social impact. One of the key things we've actually observed is that communities are no longer defined in the old academic way, where communities would be the communities that actually have the similar cultural orientation and they speak the same language. And we actually said we need to be able in the next 5 to 10 years that we actually design a funding system that is able to look at what type of communities that are emerging in a modern society in South Africa, but as well as how do we feed that into ensuring that our MDDA Act is actually much stronger and able to capture such new dynamics at a social level. And we have already received the draft report, which the chair of the research committee is actually looking at, and will be sharing the findings of that report. And we're hoping what that report will do will also influence the future MDDA Act, because our MDDA Act is actually outdated, and will highlight some of the things that we're raising. In one of our appearances here in the committee, amongst the key concerns that the portfolio committee raised was really an outreach and our presence and the footprint in the communities, and that we're really unknown, but as well as the initiatives that we fund in communities are really invisible. So what we have subsequently done was to really undertake a pilot project, which should be, I think the draft report should be submitted, and we should be able to proceed with it, and to look at what are the issues that are emerging from communities, and how do we better improve our own stakeholder engagement. I think the second point we're making is that we have improved our stakeholder engagement, and I think it speaks to exactly the issue of we had raised earlier, that part of one of the positive multiplier effects of improving our stakeholder engagement is that we've actually been able to actually have awarded an additional 12 million from our own funding coffers. And amongst the key things that the funders have really appreciated was the fact that the board is actually taking it upon themselves, where they are briefing the funders to make sure that they develop a much more better relationship. The third slide speaks to one of the pressing points which was presented to the portfolio committee at some point, is to really look at what type of support should do, a much more structured engagement between the municipalities and MDDA projects, but also community media broadly. Because you'd know, honourable members, that the sustainability of community media is not only dependent on the funding that we receive, but also it's dependent on the multiple variables. And one of the variables is the ability of the municipalities to actually support community media with infrastructure in a form of actually housing the projects, but as well as ensuring that they use some of their revenue towards the advertising. They make sure that they spend some of their budget on advertising, and in some way then that will increase the revenue of the station. So we've had an engagement with SALCA. I think they're quite amenable. Amongst the key things they will help us to do as a platform is to make sure that actually we participate in SALCA conference and really impress upon the councillors on the role of the community media. But we still would like the portfolio committee to actually assist us to ensure that we strengthen this area of work, because the resources we provide to the project are very minimal. In fact, they probably just gave the project between 18 to 24 months lifeline, and sometimes to 36 months, but really beyond 3 years, they are not able to sustain themselves. And we still, we're working on the model that is going to be able to actually ensure that there's more sustainability. These are the highlights in terms of the quarter one. I think the issues, the dispersed funding, I think we highlight the positions that we had filled, which was really a pressure point for us in terms of the previous financial year. There's a judgment, which I don't know if the portfolio committee members are aware of, that has been issued by the competition tribunal on issues of advertising and media. And they've allocated, just few millions. And one of the key things we want to have is to have an engagement with the sector so that there's a proper allocation of such resources, but as well as we ensure that actually specifically rural community media gets to benefit. And then the other area was to actually complete competency assessment for personal development. I think the point here, why this matter is so important, is that historically this is the area that MDDA has not been able to be quite effective in doing it. The initiatives going forward, under transformation, One is that we have committed with, to the sector to ensure that you have a community media in Daba, and part of the community media in Daba is actually multifold. Then the first one is to ensure that we have a very good stakeholder relations and that our programming responses to the sector is actually responsive. And the second one is to use the platform to ensure that they contribute into the MDDA Review Act. I think the third one is to deal with issues of sustainability and revenue generation for the sector. I think the second point we're making there is to ensure that as well we in a much more deliberate and structured way is that there's an intervention in terms of supporting people living with disability. The third one is to really look at the developmental funding. And part of the development funding really is going to be looking at the type of support specifically for rural communities and working class communities in the urban areas, particularly those that are not able to actually attract funding. And I think the point that I've made, Ella, is that one of our own observations, which is coming out in the social impact study, is that the sustainability of the sector is linked to the type and the quality of economic activities that are undertaken by that particular community. Because in essence, it speaks to capital inflow and capital outflow, but as well as the access to income and as well as income inequality issues. I think the social integration project, I won't repeat it. I think there's an enhanced focus on issues of language diversity, I mean, to ensure that we're true to the issues of media transformation. I mean, one of the key things we have in a conversation with ICASA there is to deal with the fact that sometimes the type of licensing they provide for station, some may not be mandatory for the station to actually ensure that it sticks to the language that is spoken in communities. I mean, sometimes there's a license that says 80% English and 20% local language, and we're saying it's actually contrary to media transformation, because amongst the key things that needs to happen is to make sure that we promote languages that would have been socially excluded during the separate development policy regime, which is apartheid. I think here is a increased support for digital migration. I make reference to the new infrastructure of broadcasting equipment, and one of the reasons is that we're centralizing is to actually ensure that there's a much more investment in digital migration and linked to local industries, because we do have local industries that are involved in the ICT sector, and in essence we want to be able through our own small funding to be able to support those industries. I think content diversification, that's very important. I've already spoken about, I think, the points around supporting journalists to report on science, to report on health issues, to report on judicial issues, fundamentally speaks on content issues, but as well as to deal with issues, pressing matters, which is around gender-based violence in our communities, is part of the content development. And as the board, we're quite committed to that. Sustainability of the of the sector, it's an ongoing. I mean, looking at the different models that we think that are applicable. I mean, we're of the view that the sustainability of the sector, you won't need to apply one size fits all, but you need to be able to look at what type of dynamics at a local level that are actually matching that, and what type of response strategy you would require per community. But I mean, there are four critical variables that are important for any sustainability of the sector. One is the ability to generate revenue. The other one is content, institutional stability, but as well as is for the project to be able to balance the dualistic nature of their responsibility, which is the social consciousness component, but as well as the enterprise development. And then below, we raise the issues of regulations and ensure that we and our monitoring and evaluation instruments are quite strengthened, and as well as the bilateral between SABC, GIS, and ICASA. Now, GIS becomes very crucial because the public sector advertising is primarily managed there, but I'm not saying that all of it, but it's sitting with the chunk resources. And amongst the key things we've really struggled to deal with is around how does GIS allocate the resources and its advertising budget towards the community intermediate sector, and we've agreed that now it's something that with the new CEO of GSIS that we really need to map out. And in fact, the testing of the call for 30% allocation on SME, it's something that we actually need to jointly test it. I think the other point that is important is around the issues of media literacy training. I mean, one of the key things we believe that South Africans and young people need to actually be supported on is their ability to read media with a very, you know, with a very objective perspective, so that they don't become consumption readers, but that they become critical and objective readers of a media. We highlight the five key strategic priorities of the organization for the next 5 years, which it started in 2015. I think we must just probably preface the point that the MDDA institution has really been undergoing a transformation mode, and part of that transformation mode is to ensure that how do we actually create a strong foundation for these five key strategic priorities to really be achieved. And it's really not it's not been very easy, but also we believe that we should be able to report or set the milestones perhaps in the next year. And I think on the MDDA review process, I've already spoken into it. I think the organizational renewal, I mean, one of the key things which probably other people will ask, why do we revel about the issue of assessment? I think the issue of institutional capacity, but as ensure that we actually develop a structured policy framework and design an organization that is actually enhanced and geared towards organizational delivery of all the things that we've actually raised. I think building a knowledge-based organization, you'd hear that I highlighted on the issues earlier on our commitment on the research, that if we build an organization that has an evidence base and that we are able to support the sector and be responsive to sectorial dynamics. Expanding the funding and the capacity for community media development, I think I've already spoken about the sustainability of the sector. And positioning MDDA as the leader in the community sector. I think there are always advocacy issues in the sector. I think one of those is the issues around the revenue generation for the sector and who do we need to talk to and who is the strategic alliance for us to be able to partner with for that revenue generation. And we thought let's just highlight, I mean, for the interest of the committee and just to plant the seed. And the list is not entirely conclusive in relation to what are the issues around the review of the MDDA Act. I think the issue we think we would need to beef up the area that speaks into the governance. And for example, I'll make an example. I mean, our Act speaks to the appointment of the of members of the board by the committee and as well as the executive authority. But I mean, over time, there's been a development of so of a compact, shareholder compact, and as well as secondment of a member in the board by an executive authority. And our Act is actually silent on that. It really reflects on the fact that the Act is actually quite old. And I know the plan previously was that our Act should be part of the next financial year in relation to the legislative program. I think composition of the board, I think the comment that was made earlier that the sensitivity around, given the economic outlook, so the bigger your board is, of course, the more expensive you also inherit. So when you reduce members of the board, but also you ensure that there's a quicker decision making, but as well as you have less stress in relation to the issues of vacancies in addressing. I think we do want the issues, I mean, and I think the point here with these bullets, we're saying that we're planting the seed for the portfolio committee to really apply, as well as around the time frames around the appointment of the board. I think there was a time where we've gone through almost three quarters with vacancies. I think now we're coming into almost a second quarter with vacancies. And we think that if we want to legislate, we legislate that process. In essence, there's going to be a lot more pressure from the committee perspective to ensure that they complete the process. The point around the conditions for participation of broadcasting and print, that the broadcasting funding is highly regulated, in that even if you want to implement your zero budgeting, it's actually difficult, because in essence it makes it difficult to actually diversify your resources. So the print sector is highly under-resourced, and I mean the shelf life of print sector is much longer, because we still read most of the books in which are actually printed. School actually still use the books that are printed. So in essence, we shouldn't really discount its role in the diversification of the sector. I think the issue around inclusion of telecom sector and data providers, I think the notion on funding, I think the notion of a data cost and data must fall. I mean, this sector is heavily affected by the cost of telephony and its ability to ensure that it sustains itself. The second component, that the data costs have really gone high, and it's such an inhibitor for the sector to ensure that it actually remains sustainable. I think I've raised the issue of legislative funding. I think the other one, really, it's the mandatory of 30% for all government departments, both national, provincial, and local government, to ensure that they use community media in their advertising spend. Okay, so I come to the status of the data core of the MDDA as we speak. So remember, I was just having some water. Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you, Chair. We thought that let's just highlight the ethos of leadership of the board, is that the board is constituted even before the other two board members had resigned, because we're currently four board members. The fourth one is the representative of the minister and the board. Is that it's diverse in terms of both in terms of skills and experience. The second component is that it's committed to it's a committed board, and it applies developmental approaches in how it's undertaking its own its business, but as well as its activist in nature. And when we talk about activists, is that we're a group of colleagues who are very solution orientated, and we believe that we shouldn't be sitting with the problem over a period of time. But I think the key issue is always then how to institutionalize our own solution-oriented approach. And hence, I'd made the point around MDDA being in a transformation mode and ensuring that part of that activism component that should be integrated in the board is actually permeates itself through the organization. I think we make the point there that when we took over, we actually inherited a wounded organization, and the feeling, the healing phase is part of our transformative mode approach that we're talking about. So our board, our really focus has been on organizational development and staff capacity. And I think we shared with the portfolio committee when they done their oversight from the organization. Part of their report, we actually outlined the spending in terms of staff capacity, because we believe that staff capacity is your initial capital. So if you invest in your human capital, you're going to be able to achieve certain critical issues. Amongst those, they'll be able to actually fully appreciate and understand why the board has taken a solution-oriented approach in how we make the decision. I think our overall objective is to build and apologize for that it should be horizontally integrated knowledge organization, not vertically integrated, because we believe that a horizontally integrated organization actually allows for cross-pollination, for exchange of ideas, but also it addresses the silo mentality, because then it means that you actually introduce a project-oriented approach in how the organization does its work. But it also means that when any of the staff member is not in the office, you're still able to actually pursue your work. the state of the agency, I think we reflect the honourable members that in the past 4 months we've seen a deterioration, incoherency, and a lack of leadership at a management level, and as such, a number of things have stalled in terms of implementation. So when we had a candidate, Mr. Lipuku was seconded from GCIS amongst the responsibility would ask that they be fulfilled as a matter of urgency, because when we appeared before the portfolio committee on the 9th of May, we had made the commitment that we will ensure that we will fill in vacant position, and that to date has stalled. The second issue is the relationship of breakdown between the board and the acting CEO, and part of it has to do with the execution of responsibility. Our observation as the board is that there's a divide and rule leadership style that has really been employed within the entity. And there's a lack of leadership and exclusion of management and staff during the audit period. In fact, members, when AG would come before and appear before you, there are a number of things that management should have explained, and they were never explained, because it's the type of leadership that was employed during the AG period. And I think as a non-executive, there's a certain level unto which you can get involved in an organization, and there are some of the things that, because you're not there on a daily basis, you can only pick it up once you're presented with a report in terms of what are the challenges. I think there's the issue of non-attendance of crucial meetings, and I think, I mean, the point, lack of limitation of board and plan decisions. There's a misleading of reporting. So when we request for certain things to be done, and I think when I make the point that we are an activist board, we don't expect that when we've requested a letter to be written, it must take 3 days for a letter to be written. We actually expect that a letter should be written. If we had asked for a letter at 8:30, at 4:30, a letter must be completed. And I think we're really struggling in terms of the current management and for the things that we've been asking. And I think here is the issue around the summarily cancellation of a critical service provider in the midst of delivery process without a contextual analysis of what is happening. And I'll make an example. I mean, we currently have a case in CCMA of one of the staff members, and who has a labor case, and a contract with a legal firm that is actually advising us on how to approach the case. In fact, it's a legal firm that had actually given us an advice that we had the case against the candidate. So the legal contract gets cancelled. So in essence, it means that it does not only hamstring the organization, but also it means that we would participate in this process with a much more weaker legal strategy. I think here the issue around signing up of unauthorized agreements and the contracts and making commitments in the contracts that have no capacity to deliver. I think the specific issue I want to make is that the DSTV contracts, there are certain commitments that the CEO has made in the contracts without the knowledge of the board. Part of it has to do with the fact that we are going to be funding bursaries. Now, we have a complement of 38 staff members. So if you're going to be funding bursaries nationally, you need to institute an internal capacity so that when that bursary application process actually arrives, we don't only have the expertise of handling those things, but in fact, there's a capacity to be able to do that. And then here, there's an exclusion of the board in the communication with the deputy minister. Okay. Has it further? I'm on slide 24, members. And then subsequently to that, I think the issue that I've highlighted earlier is that then the board had then rescinded the secondment of the acting CEO and requested that he goes back to the GCIS and so that the matter, so that we can actually look at the internal capacity rather, because we were not finding any value, so there was no extraction of value from the secondment. But instead, work had stalled for almost 90 days, if not more than that. And then there was an intervention by the minister. And the intervention by the minister to have a conversation with us so that we review our decision in relation to our rescinding of the concession. And then we then decided then what we'll then do is that we will develop as an intervention weekly meetings to look at the execution of the activities that we've allocated. I think we've already had one weekly meeting, and only less than 30% of the tasks that we'd asked that the acting CEO do had actually been completed. We've even given deadlines as far as yesterday, but there was really nothing that was forthcoming. But what we thought we needed to do was to also share an additional slide on the issues of the personal information, personnel information. Personnel information and part of the intervention by the minister, because we were getting different communique. Part of the intervention by the minister was that because the process of appointing both the CEO and the CFO had started during a correcting board, was approved by a correcting board, we need to be able to proceed with that process. And we've actually subsequently done that. We've had interviews on Saturday of the CEO potential candidate, and we're going through the assessment process this week, and we should be able to be making an offer in the first week of September, so that we have a leadership in the organization. And these are the remaining positions that have not been filled, that have been stalled, which some of them should have been at an advanced stage at the time when the acting CEO had taken over. I think when we speak about staff capacity, so our assessment is that, and I think we highlight this in our report in our previous report in relation to the recruitment strategy that was actually employed. In fact, if you look at our ages report, which will appear before the portfolio committee, is the issue of how staff members were actually recruited by management. And we make the points there is that, proper recruiting, reference checks not carried out, and staff members, appointed without minimum requirements. And as such, what had subsequently then happened was that when we were following this through as board of how is this possible, I think there was then an emerging tension, because obviously, if you follow consequential management on some of the areas above, is that it creates a job insecurity, but as well as it also means that there are issues around innovation. And these are the issues that and I think one of our final observation is that there's a misalignment between interpretation of staff of media development and diversity mandate and the board's interpretation. I think we make the point that this is despite the participation of staff in the strategic planning discussion.
I'm not sure if members need a break. Because I can see they are betting that are going on. Come again?
Sorry, we're just very short.
I think one of the things we're raising is that internally, this is what part of that transformation mode is to really ensure that our system is automated. So it's with better improved record keeping and using the sophisticated IT systems, capacity building interventions. I think the point we made earlier around the developmental assessment, the workflow design. Our workflow designs are internally are very old. So in essence, we need to be able and as part of that transformation and ensure that organizational renewal is that you build an organization that is actually enhanced with driving delivery. And then the other one is to really, I think the issues of general keeping, retaining staff, I think given the pressure outside of ensuring that you actually pay good packages. I think the other one is really, it's an external pressure, it's a pressure, a sectoral pressure. I mean, there's an issue around the cost of transmission cost, particularly for the broadcasting sector. There's a debt of 25 million, and some of the stations are likely to go off as a result. And the reason we thought we need to set up a steering committee with the Centec is to better understand what would be the best way of resolving these financial challenges for the community broadcasting sector. There's a broadcasting equipment for DTT readiness. Print publication, I think we speak there about the capacity and the fact that obviously there's a lot of e-commerce and the strategic shift in the sector, and it's something that the local project needs to gear themselves up to. The governance issues, specifically in the community broadcasting sector, where we're focusing, one of the things we're focusing on is the community media governance a training project, because it's coming up as a huge issue. I think I dwelled sufficiently on the issue of funding for the community print media. And then the other issue is related with the community media coverage of elections. This is a underfunded sector, and we had thought in the previous election we had a partnership established with the IEC, but they have limited resources, but also there is no structured funding to support the sector in terms of election funding. Our resources are limited, but that's something we will address specifically.
Before you go to that page, remember there is three outside. Because of time, members can one by one go and grab something, come back, so that we don't waste time.
Chair.
Yeah, also the board has been indulging on a Fidel. You know, Fidel Castro speaks the whole day. Not that they are revolutionary like Fidel, but you need to have allocated time so that they are able to be succinct and highlight what is important for our attention. Instead of that disruptive suggestion where one by one we go out, I would suggest let's allow them to finish now. They must get over now. Please.
Now, I realize that there are only two pages left. And maybe it's correct that we just finished the two remaining pages and then a break for a few minutes and come back for questions. There is a lot of engagement that will have to ensue after all this. Finish up, because this part, this diagnostic part, is very important for us. And I think you must be very thorough on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The slide, the next two slides, honorable members, is really on the sources of revenue, revenue analysis, and really the expenditure in terms of what we get, what are we projecting in the next 2 years until 2019-2020, and then we highlight the which is, this is over the medium term. Grant funding will be allocated both to broadcasting and print, and over the next medium term it will be 125 million. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members. We'll have to go beyond 1 o'clock if we want to be thorough on this report. Because after that, we'll have to look at the report from the speaker. So we'll definitely go beyond 1 o'clock. I think let's accept that so that we deal with this important matter. We can now break for 5 minutes and come back, and come back at 5 to 12.
Just in flight, that you don't have to walk in.